Hi, this is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the Para-X Radio Network for the Para-Cave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Para-X Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Good evening, Para-X. My name is Michael O'Neill. You're listening to the Odyssey Files, and it is 6:03. We had a little snafu with our producers for tonight, who are the wonderful powers to be, Eric and Rebecca. So I want to thank both of them for helping me out here in producing tonight's show. The reason for that being, I am currently sitting on my father's back patio in Phoenix, Arizona. So it is beautiful. It is windless, and it's like 82. How's it in Minnesota, Dave?
It's pretty similar. It's windless, and it's about 82. I happen to be sitting on the deck in a tank top having a cold margarita looking out on the lake.
There's no need to lie to people, Dave.
All right. It's about 33 or 34 degrees. I'm huddled in the house with the air or with the heat cranking, and I got on a big heavy flannel shirt.
Sweet. That makes me feel better. And the reason why I sound so happy is I just got off the golf course. So,
which is nice. Which I just got home from work, which is why I sound ecstatic also.
Okay. I can hear my echo again.
I can't hear you.
Okay, well, maybe it's just me. Oh, it's gone. Sweet. So, with all of that said, oh, by the way, because I'm on the back patio and there is like a road on the other side of this wall that separates the yard from, I don't know, the rest of society, you might hear a car pass by every once in a while. Just warning you. If it's too much of a distraction, I can obviously move inside. And I will, because that's the kind of host I am.
There goes the ratings right there.
I am willing and able to walk 10 feet for you guys. Just want to let you know. That's what I'm willing to do for you.
Oh.
I know. Thank you. So, with that said, who's ready to talk alien abductions?
Me.
What a great transition. I'm really good at transitions.
You are good at transitions. So, alien abductions.
We started? Alien abduction. So this is week three.
I was going to say week three. Yeah.
Of our 3 week UFO specific shows. And so alien abduction. We had obviously like famous sightings week one, government cover up or lack thereof for week two. Yep. And now alien abductions and I really didn't know this. They also call it abduction phenomenon.
Yep.
Did not know that.
Yep.
Subjective. I'm sorry. Gabe, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that abduction phenomenon, you know, is probably the people who have mental issues who think that they're abducted because they're like just loaded with anxiety and they're looking for like some plausible answer as to why their life is a total mess. Alien abductions, you know, there are a handful of cases out there. I found three that are absolutely amazing, and they're well documented cases.
Well, sure. I mean, you have what's his name, Travis Walton.
Well, that's the last one. Yep, that's what I had for the last case. So that's going to be a solid half hour, I think.
I don't know. As much as I completely understand that that is a huge case. I mean, they even made the movie out of it.
Yep.
You know, documentaries out of it. I mean, everything out of it. And he was also at Paracon with us. God, I think that case has just been bitten to dust. You know, but we'll see. I mean, obviously it's right along there, but if we could find other stuff, that would be great. If not, yes, we can use it.
Well, I had it as one of my three only because it's so incredible that you want to just throw it away and say, there's no way in hell that happened. I mean, that's what, you know, after reading the facts and the storyline of what happened. But then you go back and you follow up on all of the things and the fact that he was missing for 5 days. And then I went through and I found the transcripts from his actual lie detector test that was given by one of the best administrative type of guys in the field with over 30 years of experience. And he took it two separate times and he scored like in the 96th percentile, which is every time that somebody has scored that high. It's the truth. And so when they asked him those questions, he was being honest, you know, well, I read through that whole transcript. So I, you know, and I know you can fake lie detector tests. I understand that, but you know, I can't, if the guy who's been doing it for 30 years says he's telling the truth and that's what the guy does for a living is administer lie detector tests, I'm going to be predisposed to believe him.
Well, not only that, yeah. I mean, he was had that high percentile, but it wasn't just him. Every single one of his friends,
right,
also passed the lie detector tech multiple right. times.
Right. I mean, so you know, I can't throw that case to the wind, you know.
Oh, I'm not saying let's throw it to the wind. It's not like I'm saying, oh, that's fake. Let's move on. I think it's an actual case. I just think that it's been beaten to death by so many people, but you know, we've already been talking about it for 10 minutes. So,
yeah. Hey. Right. Well, let's start with the Thomas Reed family abduction. All right.
You do it.
All right. I'll start with this. So I'm going to read through some of the stuff and then I'll kind of pause and let you jump in. All right.
Okay.
All right. So the Thomas Reed family abduction, the historic, and this is important for this reason, and I'm starting with this. So the historic UFO case of the Reed family was assigned a Valley classification of CE4, which means close encounter of the fourth kind, and that is abduction, with a case category of 3, which is a high show of physical evidence. The case has many layers and is deeply intertwined and remains one of the only few CE4 cases to be mentioned within the walls of the United Nations. That's why I picked this case. So the evidence in this case includes a significant amount of radiation, strong magnetic fields, one of the very few cases to have been collected and documented by those in law enforcement. It includes a history of testimony gleaned from conscious recollections, an abundance of documentation, administrative testing, official reports, and then followed by darker consequences. The history involves Marion Burroughs, who was the grandmother, Nancy Reed, the mother, and the two brothers, Tom and Matthew. So it starts out that happened in the town in Sheffield, Massachusetts in the 1960s. Thomas was 6, and his younger brother, Matthew, it didn't say how old he was, but he's younger, experienced this life-changing event. Both have conscious memories of the lengthy experiences and non-human entities and being taken aboard a tarnished, circular-looking vessel where an image of a willow tree was displayed and still remains embedded in the minds of the boys today. So during a fall evening in Massachusetts, and it was just after a barrage of bright light bursts, a flash of light fired through their bedroom window, Tom was engulfed, and Matthew was now speaking to an empty bed. An odd stillness accompanied the light and seemed to be what left their mother, Nancy, and their grandmother, Marion, in a catatonic state in an adjacent room. Matthew got out of bed, freaked out because Tom wasn't there, ran to get his mother, only to find her in this unresponsive state. He kept jumping up and down, kind of beating on her, yelling at her. She started to partially regain her senses. When she did, she got up and she headed to the boy's bedroom. But just before she reached the bedroom, she heard what she described as a cross between a loud screech and a door slamming. And when she looked down, Matthew was no longer standing beside her. He was taken at that time. So now alone in the home with only the grandmother, she told the grandmother to stay there. Nancy went out on horseback and frantically searched their 80-acre horse farm. She spotted the boys later as she was out looking for them from the Appalachian Trail. Tom and Matthew were standing about 15 feet away from each other on a wide dirt path with their eyes locked on one another, heavily shaken and in need of desperate care. According to Nancy, the boys were visibly suffering from shock. She stated Tom was not responding at all. Their mother and grandmother gave them plenty of fluids, wiped the boys down with warm washcloths, wrapped them in warm blankets, and then put them to bed. Okay, so that case is interesting already for a bunch of reasons. Number one, it's a case that's been presented to the United Nations, and I got more to talk about that case going to the UN. The other thing was, you know, that the from what young Matthew can remember, the beam of light shot through the window and grabbed Tom and took him, and was instantaneous. And then as he went to get his mom, he comes down the hallway with his mom trying to describe what's happening and takes her back to the bedroom. And as they're approaching the bedroom, she hears a weird loud noise, and all of a sudden he disappears. He's gone. What do you think of that so far?
I don't really know. I mean, I can't say all, but a lot of the other claims and stories and whatnot that involve the white light taking people out of the room are like this slow levitation, and like they go through the window and, you know, and they're gone. This yep. almost seems to be like transporter.
Yep.
You know, type stuff where poof, they're gone.
Right.
And I don't know. It seems to be a little far-fetched just because of that fact in and of itself. It just seems to have a different technology based, I guess, if you want to call it that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are other stories that involve just poof, they're gone instead of like being levitated up or out, or because the first case that I was going to talk to you about actually has that, where they see the person levitate off the their bed or whatever and go out the window, not just poof, they're gone.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad you're a skeptic, because I got stuff to back up what I just told you.
Well, so, I'm glad that you asked me that. I'm glad that you asked me before you told me the evidence.
Well, I did. That's why I just wanted to get your feeling for what you thought about it overall. So that was the initial thing. The second thing that happened, the family was heading home following a horse show. It was about 8 o'clock at night when they observed what Marion referred to as a bright floating strip mall above the left side of the station wagon. The family spoke of what they felt was some sort of a force with a tingling vibe running through their bodies before the car coasted to a stop off to the side of the road. Only the sounds of stones tapping under the fender wells of the car were heard, followed by a dead silence. A barometric change in pressure was also felt before a deafening eruption of katydids and crickets. So Tom's recollection is one of disturbing accounts. This is presuming that this is the second time they were taken, okay? He remembers being in a very large dark room with really long, brightly illuminated hallways under what he described as a body-encompassing chamber or cylinder, crying out for his other family members who were in the room in the same type of thing. So like they were encased in what comes to my mind would be something that looks along the lines of
a Borg cube.
Like a freeze tube. Yeah, like a cryogenic freeze tube, like if you were going to be in long-term outer space kind of thing. Either that or maybe like an observation kind of tube, like maybe the atmosphere in there wasn't conducive to their survival, so they had them in there. Tom described the beings that were witnessed during this incident as being genetically engineered or manufactured intelligent insect-type beings with strong human characteristics, such as hands. They stood on 2 feet and varied from 3 to 5 feet in height.
Hold on. One.
Obviously, not your starting NBA team right there.
Quick question.
Yep.
So insect-like, so almost like praying mantises?
Well, never got into that from what I could find. I did look that up, but that's interesting.
That EBEs. It would be praying
mantis, yes.
EBEs, man.
Yep.
Oh, we're finding correlations.
Yes, we are finding correlations.
So we need to keep this on the download, Dave, or we're going to have visitations by the Secret Service.
No, well, it could get worse than that because I'm going to touch on that too here. So after the return to the vehicle, the family experienced a period of disorientation where it is said that the car was facing a different direction than when it had come to a stop. Thomas ran to get his grandmother, who was wandering aimlessly in the middle of the road. Nancy was catatonic in the passenger seat, but before the incident happened, she was driving the station wagon, and Matthew was unconscious in a fetal position in the back seat. And that's when Tom got brought back down from the spaceship. So everybody else had been basically thrown back in the thing, but they were all in a different kind of array. So here's where it gets interesting. There's a bunch of other stuff.
I think that they would take better notes.
I would
aliens. Think
so. I know. So, I'm going to go back to this. So the reason that it went to the United Nations in 1992, the Reed case would assess Blechman, who was an attorney, which I didn't bother reading all that, by adding credible and corroborated testimony to include the Reed statements on the barometric change in pressure, the electromagnetic vibe calming state, and the manipulation of gravity, all which was voiced in support of other cases by Robert at the United Nations Symposium on October 2nd, 1992. The objective of the symposium was to introduce substantiated cases to motivate the UN to reconsider Rule 33-426, which is the establishment of an agency or a department of the UN for undertaking, coordinating, and disseminating the results of research into unidentified flying objects. This came 10 days before NASA became SETI's microwave program, the microwave observing project. This mention in the United Nations proves testament to the caliber of the seriousness of the Reed case. All right. So give me 1 second here. 40 years later, in March 30th, 2009, Matthew is in Brownburg, Indiana, the younger brother. His SUV's instrument panel was – Matthew was taken out of his vehicle. When they found the vehicle, his instrumentation panel was damaged. Matthew was missing time, and there was blood on the steering wheel and his shirt. A rather high amount of radiation was detected and verified. Magnetic fields were also witnessed and recorded on video. This magnetism would spin a compass needle from a distance of 2 feet. Officer White, a detective with over 30 years law enforcement experience, worked the case and reported it as an authentic encounter with an unknown powerful force. So Robert Bigelow, the founder of Bigelow Aerospace, who had recently financed an organization of teams to investigate CE3 and CE4 cases, such as the Reed case, went in and brought together what they called the STAR team, which was made up of like medical doctors, psychiatrists, paranormal experts, just a whole wide array, whole encompassing array of people. All investigating personnel came to the same conclusion and validated the radiation, magnetic anomalies, as well as the medical records, statements, and testimonies of Matthew, and the fact that he was abducted out of his SUV on that day. Here's where it gets scary. Oh, and they did the advanced polygraph examination, and it was given by a 30-year-old veteran police officer, and he scored 99.1%, which is outstanding. Anything over 96 is pretty interesting. So here, though, this is what's interesting to me. In 2006, Howard voiced his interest in a collective book project on the family's experience with vessels and other life forms, and it included a compilation of sensitive materials gathered over the years. Howard suffered an untimely death by a virus of unknown origin, in air quotes, on October 2nd. This was 14 years to the day after the Reed case was mentioned at the United Nations Symposium on October 2nd, 1992. The CDC, upon sweeping Howard's office, reported finding a vial containing the deadly virus in his air conditioning unit. The building was closed and remains closed to this day. October 6th was then proclaimed a day of remembrance in Howard's honor by the city of Bridgeport, Connecticut, as he was strongly supported by Senator Christopher Dodd, a PhD, who released his test results regarding the Reed case after evaluating the family members on September 15, 2010. On the same year, November 12th, he was also found dead of a mysterious virus that's not documented in any of the books. I'll stop there. Yeah.
did you just do like the equivalent of a mic drop?
I did. I did like the mic drop.
Because all of a sudden there's like this boom and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go way back to the start of that. What exactly does a floating strip mall look like?
Well, I found that to be interesting too. I'm thinking like, kind of like the shape of a battleship, long and narrow. I'm thinking kind of like, you know, would be my guesstimate, like a city block would look. I mean, that's kind of what strip mall looks like. It's kind of long and narrow.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would be maybe not as big as a strip mall. Who knows, though? They could have had small strip malls in the 1960s over there in Massachusetts. So I don't know. You know, there could have been like four stores in a strip mall then. But it's interesting because also along with this exact same case, when the thing that she called a floating strip mall was picked up on the Air Force radar, yeah, that same night, and it put it exactly over the corner of their farm. They had an 80-acre horse farm. It put it right over the corner of their farm where she said she saw it, and there was an event going on not too far away, and there were several people outside, and all the people outside at different times documented and reported that they saw a very odd object with multiple lights and very weird configuration that had this like elongated look to it. And it was like just hovering over the trees and over the woods at the back of the property.
Well, you see, you should have put that into the original.
Well, I couldn't context. Because my notes are all over the place. But okay. I wanted to see what you thought of just the original abduction of the young kids first, because I agree with you. A lot of the ones that you hear about are the, you know, okay, it picked them up. They slowly floated away in this white light. You know, this is like a bright kind of reddish orange light, and it just goes, poof, and the kid's just gone. And then the other kid, there's like this screeching, slamming door noise, and the other little guy's gone. I mean, that's instantaneous abduction. So I think for that in itself, it's also interesting.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, then we're chalking this one up to real.
I think we should chalk it up to unexplained.
Well, I don't like the fact, you know what I don't like? I don't like the fact that the guys who were going to do the book and all of the evidence and some of the stuff that was considered to be like by the guys in the black suits that say, don't discuss this any further. And then they're going to discuss it. They're both dead from a virus that doesn't exist. And they closed the whole building down where the guy worked that it happened at, and it's never been reopened since. What the hell's that? That screams government conspiracy cover up all over. Just an observation.
Yeah. No. You're probably right. I need to stop kicking the table.
Right. I don't like the fact that the building's not reopened. If they said, hey, it was just some weird thing and blah, 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 and they cleaned it out, and the building's back open and it's being used for, you know, business office space or whatever. Okay. But the fact that this happened so long ago and the building is still closed, I don't know. I don't like that. To me, that says that somebody had some information that was too legitimate and that it needed to be made sure that they didn't get that information out for some reason, which, again, none of us know, because is it a cover up? Do they really exist? Or was this some type of, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
It's interesting. You
know, it is interesting. And I really like it. You mentioned at the UN and that it was so important and so well documented that to stand in front of the United Nations Council and present this as a credible piece of evidence, the guy, you know, you'd have to be extremely like embedded and in ground into this case to stand in front of a United Nations Council and speak of it in such a way that you it's legitimate and they need to seriously consider this and they need to take action on it.
What kind of action do you think they would be able to take?
Well, who knows? I mean, you could, you know, well, okay, let's say this, you know, exact action, I'm not sure, but if you got the United Nations, which is now, you know, here comes my ignorance of, or old age, one of the two. I know that there's a whole like ton of representatives from all kinds of different countries and stuff, but I don't know exactly who's there, but I know there's quite a few countries represented in the UN. If they all said, you know what, this sounds like something we need to look into, you could, if that happened, you certainly would have a ton of resources at your disposal to investigate this case. And I think it would be interesting to say, let's say Poland came over and looked at it, and let's say, you know, the British came over and looked at it and put their spin on it. And if they couldn't debunk it, and they found it to be fascinating, wouldn't that just lead to that much more credibility that another country came to our country and looked at this case and said, wow, this is amazing. You know, we've got
depends on the country.
Well, okay, I'll give you that.
okay. All right.
So
it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, I like
that.
Yeah, I do. I like this one a lot.
Okay, well, my first one isn't that interesting. It's interesting, but only from only from the perspective. So, okay. Her name is Amy Rylance. I hope I said that right. R-Y-L-A-N-C-E. Okay. She was 22, had her husband named Keith and a friend Petra over at their house in Gondaya, Australia. I probably should have tried to pronounce them a little bit better before I brought them on. But anyway, so it's October 2001. So Petra wakes up at 11:15 p.m. and goes into the living room where she sees Amy being carried in a sleeping position out through the window on a beam of light to a quote-unquote huge ship outside. So not a floating strip mall, not very descriptive at all, but pretty vague. So Petra wakes Keith, and by the time they enter the room again, Amy's gone. Their curtain is torn, and the bushes outside are burnt. So they call the police, who obviously did not really believe them. But then they got a phone call an hour and a half later from a woman in Mackay, Queensland, which is an 8-hour drive from Gondaya.
Okay.
And this woman who is in a hospital says she's there with Amy, who is dazed and dehydrated. Nobody can explain how she traveled 8 hours in an hour and a half. So Amy was uninjured, except red marks on her upper thighs and heels. She said she remembered lying on the bed with tall figures leaning over her, assuring her and taking samples from her. When she was found, her body hair had grown considerably, suggesting she had been gone for much longer than a few short hours that she was missing. So there's a lot here that's interesting, and there's a lot here that can be like any sort of skeptic could probably pass this off as something else,
yeah,
or as a hoax. But before we get into like both sides, what do you think?
Well, until you threw out the was plausible that she might have been grabbed, you know, by something. I'm wondering if maybe they're looking at that wrong, and that maybe, I don't know, the lack of gravitation or whatever happens when you get abducted and taken onto a spaceship, that maybe that causes some sort of reaction to the human body that would make your hair grow. I mean, that's an interesting concept that's put in there, because I don't remember reading anything on any abductions where, like, people, you know, came home and had a full beard or had long leg hair, or their underarm hair was, you know, if it was a female, it looks like she hadn't shaved her armpits in 2 weeks, you know? So I don't know. That's the first time I've heard something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how to take that one either, because, I mean, she was gone for 90 minutes.
Right.
So, I mean, is that, do extraterrestrials maybe have some sort of ability to speed up our metabolism and get things, get reactions from our bodies?
Well, I could tell you one of the things I found today that I didn't go deep into for this show, but that I found interesting that I was reading, and this that actually was over the course of the weekend here, was that they harvest eggs from females. And so I think that that kind of might go hand in hand with the fact that if a woman wasn't ovulating, that maybe they sped up her body somehow and brought her to the point where she produced an egg so they could harvest it. I mean, that's a somewhat plausible answer for her having, you know, an excessive growth of body hair, was that maybe a couple weeks went by. Now, is that a couple weeks only an hour and a half in their time realm compared to our time realm? I mean, I don't know.
Are you using the scientific theory that different gravities on different planets have different time?
Yeah.
Because I know that got really popular with gravity, or not gravity, inner space. No.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't inner.
It's like the time-space continuum thing.
Yeah, but what movie am I thinking of? The one with Matthew McConaughey. Is that?
Well, I wasn't even thinking of a movie. I was just thinking of all the stuff I read online.
Oh, well, I was just going to use that as that movie as an example for what the whole time thing, but it's all right. No biggie. So, yeah, it's interesting. They have pictures, obviously, the curtain and burnt bushes. Obviously, that can be faked.
Right.
You know, she could have easily, you know, they would like drive to this place and then an hour and a half call. So it'd be like, hey, she was only gone for an hour and a half. I mean, none of this stuff, you know, all of this stuff could easily be hoaxed.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
Right. And the only thing I would say was, you know, was there any other witness that might have seen her? So it's an 8 hour drive. Okay. So they said an hour and a half went by. Is there any other possible witness in this case that maybe saw her three, four, 5 hours before she arrived at the hospital that would still be extremely credible to the fact that she was seen way over here and it's 8 hours to get over here? You know what I'm saying? And other yep. than like the boyfriend and the friend or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Like the mailman or the milkman or like, you know, the postal delivery guy or, you know, whatever. Somebody who actually saw her at her house that could say, yeah, I saw her at 5 o'clock. And then at 8:30, she showed up at the hospital. That's an 8 hour drive away.
Right. Not part of the story.
Okay.
I guess you could say.
I mean, all right. So hoax that, you know, you'd have to either fly or take a helicopter, and that would be an awfully expensive hoax.
That would be a very expensive hoax.
I'm just especially, saying.
Especially for just, you know, like three paragraphs in BuzzFeed.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I think that's a lot of money.
That would be that. A lot of investment of time, yeah. And finances.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go to commercial. We're a little over halfway done with the show. And then I actually have some questions for Dave. Uh-oh. about abductions. I would like to get your opinion on.
Okay.
So we'll be right back. I don't know, a couple minutes. You're listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X. We're back.
We did not get abducted.
We did not. No.
If we did, it was a very short trip.
Although if Rebecca would have had her way, we would have been sitting here the rest of the show and you'd have been listening to commercials.
But
so
I don't feel any different. I'll have to wait and see if I get a weird rash forms on my lower back or something in a couple days.
All right. So because Dave wants to get to at least one more thing, I will cut my questions down. I have one very specific one that came to mind this past week when I was thinking about this.
Okay.
That I would like your opinion on.
All right.
Why do you think it's, I don't want to call them like unimportant because they're not, or maybe because they're, that's not because they are, because they are important, but why do you think it's always like people from trailer parks and it's like children from like horse farms and like maybe indiscriminate? No, is that the word I'm looking for? Just not the high end people that you would get a lot of media coverage. Like you never see a billionaire like Elon Musk who's trying to go to space and make right. like space travel possible. You never see him ever say, I saw this UFO or I got visited by aliens or I was abducted. Like it never seems to be a high profile individual. It always seems to be like the local drunk or children, you know, that they could be making up stories. Like people that like society would not particularly believe.
Or not like, miss.
Or yeah, exactly. Not miss. I mean, obviously, you know, the billionaire CEO of Amazon probably would be missed.
Right.
You know, and, but why do you think that is deliberate? And if so, why? And, or do you think there's something about them specifically that makes them choose them?
All right. So I could go two ways on this, so maybe I'll throw both ways at you, but I'll give you this one first. I think that the reason that you see and I'm just going to say the common average person, the reason that you see the common average person telling these stories of abductions and stuff like that is because I think, number one, they're not CEOs of corporations. They're not movie stars. They're not famous sport athletes. And maybe they think, you know, this thing happened to them. This thing, let's just assume here, we'll use the assumptive factor, that something really happened to them. Maybe it wasn't an alien abduction in the true sense of how America sees alien abductions, okay? But maybe it was something, right? I mean, maybe it was something. And they can't explain it. So this is their Andy Warhol 5 minutes of fame, right? This is going to put them on the map for their 5 minutes. I think that if somebody who was in a position of authority So it wouldn't even have to be a famous person, but let's just say a famous athlete, a famous actor, actress, a politician, all the way down to a town mayor, senators, Senate seats, you know, well-respected physicians, airline pilots, although some airline pilots report sightings, but that's even rare. But I think that people like that, I don't think that it necessarily doesn't happen to them or that they don't see something they can't explain. I think that they are predisposed to knowing that a lot of fingers are going to get pointed at them and a lot of people are going to dig into their personal life to see if they're legitimate or not. And maybe they've got some baggage. Maybe they've got some skeletons in the closet that don't pertain to, you know, it doesn't pertain to their career now, but it could be like damning information if society got a hold of it. You know, in that same theory, take a look at what's happening now with all of the people that are coming out of the woodwork saying so-and-so grab my buttocks. Right. You know, it's been what, 16 years, 29 years. Okay. Nobody said anything about it. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's coming out of the woodwork after the Bill Cosby thing kind of broke the floodgates open. And now everybody's like being accused of something, whether they did it or not is irrelevant. But things like that is a damning piece of information, because that little thing, even if they didn't do it, just the fact that they were accused is going to take a percentage of the population, whether what happened or didn't happen, it's going to take a percentage of the population, and it's going to make that percentage of the population think that that person is evil and is a wrongdoer and doesn't deserve anything and should withdraw from office or should end their career and should just go hide under a rock somewhere the rest of their life. Right? Now, we see it happen all the time.
Yes.
Okay. The other part of that is, I think, and you touched on it, and we just both touched on it, is that the people aren't important. They're just common people. You're not going to be missed. That goes hand in hand with the movie called The Fourth Kind that I was kind of thinking that I was going to talk about tonight, and then I kind of decided not to. But in a short amount of time, there were 34 disappearances in Nome, Alaska. 34 people went missing in Nome, Alaska. The FBI investigated the case. That's how many people went missing. The FBI actually went to Nome, Alaska, investigated the case. Nome, Alaska is a known hotspot for UFO sightings and paranormal activity. The FBI came out of there and said they were indigenous people who were drunkards, and they went wandering off in frigid temperatures. That's how people write people off.
Yep. But you can't do that to somebody that's quote unquote important.
That's correct. Right. If the mayor of Nome, Alaska went missing, they wouldn't say, well, yeah, you know, Tom, he probably went on a bender and got drunk and then wandered off in the woods to get eaten by a polar bear. Right. They would have everybody scouring the countryside for Tom because he's the mayor of Alaska.
But if mayor of Nome, Alaska,
or mayor of Nome, sorry. Yeah. Mayor of Nome, Alaska. But if just your common guy who is down on his luck and, you know, living out of his car or living in a, you know, trailer park community or just renting somewhere and he's looking for a job, but he's having a hard time. And so he goes to the bar and decides to get drunk one night and he walks out and he gets abducted by an alien spacecraft and he disappears. They just chalk that up to, well, yeah, you know, he was in here having some cocktails and, He just walked out. You know, Alaska's a rough country. Got a lot of predator animals. Probably just took him for food. And, well, we'll just close the door on that case. And I think that happens. I honestly do. I don't think all 34 of those people just got drunk and went wandering around in the wilderness in Alaska.
Either that or look for a very, very fat polar bear.
Well, but I would be looking for some blood and some human remains. And, you know, if a polar bear comes and chomps on your face as you're walking home from the bar, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a little DNA evidence of blood spraying out onto the road.
Maybe.
And if the FBI was there and they seriously did their job, then, you know, they should have uncovered something. And they didn't for these 34 individuals. And 34 is a pretty high number in my book.
34 is a very high number.
You know, if it was three or four people, I would say, okay, maybe that's a plausible explanation. But 34 people, that's a very high number. So if it's happening, I think that for what I think that if the what they are purported to be taking, which is semen, eggs, neurological tissue samples, and I saw this really interesting thing on I was looking at yesterday that said that they do this thing called inner vision or something along those lines, where the people who are abducted say that the aliens get really close to their face with this, and they've got these really big eyes, and they look into their eyes, and the people who are abducted can't close their eyes, and it's like the aliens are scanning them, and they somehow can control their brain thoughts and functions to show and feel emotions and also memories, almost like they're playing back on a tape recorder, and that that they're using the visual nerve to go back into the brain and kind of tap into it and start looking at these things. And if that's the case, then maybe, and it's really happening, then maybe they are interested in our emotional feelings. Maybe they don't have emotions, and maybe they don't understand what emotions are, and so they are trying to figure them out. What is happy? What is sad? What is love? What is fear, you know?
Okay, so that kind of leads into a second question, but you wanted to get to one more case. So if there's time after your case, I will ask you my follow-up question.
Okay, so the only reason I want to talk about this one is because it's a very cool case, number one, and it's a very interesting case because of regression therapy. Regression hypnosis. And I love regression hypnosis. And we're going to do a show down the road here on regression hypnosis.
Oh, so, goody.
Oh, it's a great topic. So, okay. The Betty and Drayson alien abduction. South Ashburnham, Massachusetts. Again, out east. Kind of interesting that a lot of these were out east. January 25th, 1967. One of the most celebrated cases in UFO abduction history. Betty was working in her kitchen while her seven children, mother and father, were in the living room. Shortly after 6:30, the lights in the house blinked. Immediately thereafter, a reddish light began to beam through the kitchen window. The sudden darkness in the house set the kids' nerves on edge, and Betty ran to comfort them. Her father ran into the kitchen to peer out the window and find the source of the unusual light. To his utter shock, he saw five odd-looking beings coming toward the house in a hopping motion. Before he could regain his composure, he saw the beings walk right through the wooden front door. What happened next would test the imagination and strength of even an open-minded, adventurous person. The entire family was suddenly put into a state of suspended animation. One of the creatures went to Betty's father, while one of the other four began to make telepathic communication with Betty. One of the group seemed to be the leader of sorts. He was about 5 foot tall. The other four appeared to be about a foot shorter. All the beings had a pear-shaped head, wide eyes, small ears and noses. Their mouths were only slits and never moved, though they were able to communicate using their minds. The aliens were holding Betty's children in a frozen state of consciousness, but when Betty showed concern for them, the aliens released her 11-year-old daughter to assure her that the children were not being harmed. Betty was taken by the aliens outside to a waiting craft, which rested on the side of a sloped backyard. The craft was estimated to be about 20 feet in diameter in the classic UFO shape. So Betty believes that after she was boarded the craft, it joined what she considered to be a mother craft. So like this was just a little craft that lit and picked her up and then basically went and joined this mother craft, where she underwent a physical examination and also was subjected to the effects of strange equipment. After this, she was given a type of bizarre test, a bizarre test which caused her pain at first, but resulted in a kind of religious experience. Approximately 4 hours later, she was returned to her home by two of her captors. When she arrived, her entire family was still there in a state of suspended animation. One of the beings had stayed in her house, evidently to watch over the other family members. After releasing the family from the trance-like state, the aliens left. Okay. That's what happened. Okay. So here's the interesting thing. She was contacted. She reached out answered an ad from a doctor who was soliciting abduction experiences from the general public. At the time, her letter was dismissed because of its unusual details, and it would be January 1977 before her story would be fully investigated. The investigative team assigned to the Andreessen case included a solar physicist, an electronics engineer, an aerospace engineer, a telecommunications specialist, and a UFO investigator. The services of a hypnotist and a medical doctor trained in psychiatry were also used. Betty's case involved 12 months of investigation, a solid year they investigated this case. And as you can see, a pretty wide spectrum of backgrounds of people investigating her case. She was given a character reference check, 2 lie detector tests, a psychiatric review, and an excruciating 14 sessions of regressive hypnosis. The results of this inquiry were startling. Betty, along with her daughter, relived a detailed account of a UFO experience, agreeing on every single basic aspect. The results were published in a 528-page account, which stated that Betty and her daughter were sane individuals who sincerely believed that all the details given in their statements were true. This abduction case is still being investigated today. That is credible. People are still looking at this thing 40 years later. Something happened.
That's
a heck of a team to put together.
It is definitely a heck of a team to put together. I agree with you on that.
And a year and 14 sessions of regression hypnotherapy.
I'm surprised that if this is a 40-year-old case, why I haven't heard of it before.
Well, I don't know. You never saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind either, and that's a fantastic movie.
Yes, but even is that 40 years old?
30.
See, that's not 40 years old.
Oh, sorry.
And I've heard of it.
Well, yeah, it's true. We're not like part of MUFON. You know, we don't like run around the country investigating abnormal sightings and abductions and stuff. This just happened to be a topic for our show. We are more paranormal background. So,
well, that's true. But I mean, being part of the paranormal is just anything that's not normal. UFOs are not normal.
Well, no,
I agree. At least not yet.
Not yet.
I wonder why they chose her.
I don't know. Good question. Didn't take any of 7 kids and her mom and dad didn't take any of them other than her. Well, although they must have taken the daughter at some point because the daughter and Betty both had side by side recalls of exact details of what happened inside that ship under regressive hypnotherapy. That wouldn't come out as something that you and I talked about, wouldn't show up in regressive hypnotherapy. So if Betty had been talking to her daughter about it, even in explicit detail, the daughter wouldn't have those memories. That would just be knowledge for her. It wouldn't be a memory.
That is true.
I'll let you ponder that.
Well, and they also obviously showed great care. And what they were doing. I mean, they released the daughter from the suspended animation to show that she was perfectly okay.
Right.
Another one stayed behind in order to make sure that the family was okay while she was on the ship.
Right.
It is definitely fascinating. I like it a lot. So anything else, or we have just enough time for my question?
Just enough time for your question, I believe.
Okay, so we have 4 minutes left, maybe even a little less. So make this quick. So do you believe that life here on Earth is the end result or whatever from alien DNA? Do you believe that perhaps life on Earth is some sort of alien petri dish?
And you're giving me 4 minutes to answer.
Nope, I'm giving you 3 minutes now.
Yeah, 3 minutes.
It took a minute to tell me to say the question.
Well, that's pretty deep thinking from you, being that you're on vacation and everything.
Well, you know what? That's just another one of those things I'm willing to do for my fans. Both of them.
What? If that were the case, why would they be coming down here and harvesting DNA and eggs and sperm from people that are being abducted? Why would they be harvesting like central nervous system tissue and brain tissue? I would think that they would already kind of be done. I would think that we would be the end result of the experiment, unless they're trying to create some type of hybrid, alien, human type of thing.
Well, that's just it. That was another one of the cases that I had. I'm going to go over it really, really, really quick. The abduction of Jesse Long. He was 5 years old when he was abducted for the first time. He was exploring the woods with his brother when a tall figure appeared and paralyzed him. He was taken multiple times. He claims he was experimented on, including having sperm extracted that was used to quote-unquote crossbreed with a female alien. In 1990, he says the aliens presented him with a baby, which they said was his. He also met 9 more of his hybrid children.
Huh. Well, that's a lot of Father's Day cards.
That is, yes. And how do you ship them? I'm pretty sure the U.S., the United States Postal Service doesn't go to Vlarglong, or whatever they're.
No, right. But I'm sure they could just throw them into a wormhole and have it pop up in your backyard, Then bloop. And then, like a little fountain of Father's Day cards comes up out of your grass and then it disappears right away. And then you got all these Father's Day cards just laying in your backyard.
Oh, I'm sure they just email them.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Aliens got to have email.
Well, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that.
Even extraterrestrials use Gmail. Everybody does.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to put that aside for right now. Maybe that's another show.
Maybe another show. Here's an interesting last second thought. Perhaps the people that we were talking about that are really important, Elon Musk, you mentioned, and high ranking government officials and all these other people, maybe they're in on it. Maybe if Roswell is true, maybe they are part of the consortium.
Conspiracy? Yeah, conspiracy? Well,
the consortium.
Okay.
That is supposed to exist. That is taking alien technology and reverse engineering it back to things that we can utilize for advancement of the humankind.
Possible. So on that note, we have to go.
Yeah, we do have to go.
We're taking over Matt's time, which I'm perfectly all right with, but I'm sure he isn't.
Probably not.
So thank you, everybody. I'm going to continue my vacation. Everybody can go back to doing whatever they were doing before this.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, we won't see you.
So be safe, everybody.
Absolutely. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. All right. Have yourselves a good night.
Adios.